Today is Monday, July 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Australia launches a new COVID-19 vaccine trial.
We're confident that we'll get through there to a positive outcome in the end.
Plus, the EU announces troop deployment to the Sahel.
Their job will be to work alongside the armed forces of Mali to try and bring some stability to that crucial three-border area.
And a new United Nations report says the fight against hunger is going in the wrong direction. We'll have these stories and more next. Australian scientists began human trials on Monday of a potential COVID-19 vaccine developed at the University of Queensland. Reuters' Libby Hogan starts us off.
Australia kicked off the first human trials of a potential COVID-19 vaccine on Monday, developed by scientists at the University of Queensland. The trials began in the morning with a group of volunteers, and the preliminary results of the trial are expected to be released by the end of September. Paul Young is the co-leader of the trial.
Like every vaccine trial, this may or may not succeed. It's not a guaranteed, but we're confident that we'll get through there to a positive outcome in the end.
The participants will be given two immunisations 4 weeks apart.
This is the first in human, a randomised, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. There will also be dose escalation component to determine the optimal vaccine dose for future studies. So this phase one study will be assessing essentially vaccine safety and also immune responses to that vaccine.
Over a dozen experimental vaccines are being trialled around the world as the pandemic continues to spread. Australia has avoided the high COVID-19 casualty numbers of other nations, recording fewer than 10,000 coronavirus cases of infection and just over 100 deaths in total.
Anti-mask activists on Saturday took their campaign to a grilled cheese bar and restaurant in Windermere, Florida, a state that is fast becoming the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic. Reuters' Chris Dignam takes things from here.
Anti-mask activists in Florida over the weekend took their campaign to this grilled cheese bar in Windermere, a town just outside Orlando, where the state's Department of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco served the owner with a warning.
Are you taking this woman's alcohol license from her today?
This is America.
This is not communist China.
33 and Melt has become a focal point of tension since owner Carrie Hudson said she would not require customers to wear masks after county officials mandated the use of masks in public.
We want them to stand out right now.
These anti-mask activists organized the gathering at 33 and Melt with a promise of 100 free meals for customers who come without wearing masks.
This is a single woman who is running this grilled cheese business. This is her dream, and all she is doing is standing up for the rights of people to make their own medical decisions.
The demonstration here highlighted a major challenge Florida and other states face as coronavirus cases soar in the U.S. Florida reported more than 15,000 new cases in just 24 hours on Sunday, breaking New York's record of close to 13,000 new cases on April 10th. Florida's record spike was reported a day after Walt Disney World in Orlando reopened with a limited number of guests who were required to wear masks and have their temperatures checked. But about 12 miles away from the theme park, these activists say wearing a mask infringes upon their individual freedom.
How I view it is everyone's health care decisions are their own.
But the country's top public health officials have urged the use of masks to slow the spread of the virus, which has killed more than 135,000 Americans.
Stay in your house!
In addition to the record number of new cases reported in Florida on Sunday, more than four dozen hospitals in the state reported that their intensive care units are completely full due to a surge of COVID-19 patients.
Libby Hogan and Chris Dignam report for Reuters News. Indian health officials said on Monday that there are 28,701 new confirmed cases in the past 24 hours. That country trails only the United States and Brazil in the total number of cases since the outbreak began late last year, and authorities in several states are putting back in place lockdown restrictions to try and slow the spread of the virus. Mexico's health ministry announced on Sunday the country's death toll had risen to over 35,000, the fourth highest in the world, and it reminded people of the need to practice physical distancing, wear a mask, and washing their hands. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa announced a renewed ban on the sale of alcohol and a new nighttime curfew on Sunday as the number of new COVID-19 cases continues to grow. South Africa has the most cases in Africa. Ramaphosa said in a televised address that hospitals and doctors do not have the facilities and the time to deal with alcohol-related injuries at this moment. VOA has expanded coverage of the global pandemic on our website. The United Nations and the European Union have condemned the Malian government's use of lethal force during protests, calling for President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to resign and urged it to release detained opposition leaders. In a statement late on Sunday, the United Nations mission to Mali, the African Union, the West African Regional Bloc of ECOWAS, and the European Union criticized vandalism by protesters, but reserved their sharpest criticism for the authorities. International and regional powers also fear that the political turmoil in Mali could undermine their military campaigns against Islamist insurgents in West Africa's Sahel region. Now, to address that concern, the French defense minister announced that an EU joint task force would be deployed to the region on Wednesday. Now, to get the details, I spoke with journalist Catherine Field in Paris, France, via WhatsApp.
Essentially, the French defense minister has said that about 100 French and Estonian troops will take up positions in Mali from Wednesday. Their job will be to work alongside the armed forces of Mali to try and bring some stability to that crucial three border area. The problem is that in the last year or so, all the insurgents there have changed their tactics. They've moved from very small IED operations into a more nimble force, and they are seeing their large-scale tactical maneuvers from the various groups that are operating there against forces of the local armed forces. But it is, again, an indication of what we've been seeing from the French President Emmanuel Macron, that it is a crucial time in the Sahel and more forces are needed on the ground.
Speaking of more forces, you mentioned French forces, Estonian forces. Who else is participating in this?
Well, by the end of the year, we're going to see some soldiers from the Czech Republic. We're also going to see Swedish troops there. And the French defense minister has said there is the possibility of Italian forces. Now, on the one hand, this does look good. But let's remember, there are 27 EU states. The French had hoped that 11 European nations would send some form of support. But for the time being, we're only seeing a handful. So the French still have got a lot of work to do to get the rest of the EU nations on board.
Speaking of concerns, Mali currently is undergoing a lot of political unrest. How does that factor into their concerns overall about the Sahel region?
Well, it's not just Mali that the French government is looking at. They're also looking at Niger, Burkina Faso. There is a real concern there that this whole region is entering in a phase that it might be difficult to pull back from. Another area of big concern is that, yes, the French troops in Barkhane have been having successes on the ground. They have, of course, in the last few months said that they have killed major operatives in Al-Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb. What they're seeing as the result of that, though, is that there are more child soldiers. And just last week, the commander of French forces, the Barkhane forces, said that they had noticed that there were more child soldiers. They're being trained, they've been indoctrinated. And this is of concern. And in fact, the French defense minister, in the statement over the weekend, she has warned that despite all the precautions that have been taken, she does warn that child soldiers could be wounded or even killed during this next phase of fighting.
Catherine Field is a reporter living and working in Paris. Malaysia's federal court on Monday announced that the decision over a contempt case against the editor-in-chief of a leading independent news portal would be delayed. Stephen Gan, the editor-in-chief of Malaysia Kini, appeared in court on Monday to face contempt proceedings over readers' comments on its website that were critical of Malaysia's judiciary in a case that has been widely seen as a test for press freedoms.
Well, I would say it, like submitted in court, it would have a chilling effect because it would affect all host content providers, Facebook, Google, blog runners, who provide facilities for third parties to upload information. And those people would be implicated by this decision.
Malaysia's federal court, the country's highest tribunal, said that its panel of seven judges needed more time to deliberate on the issues of the case. Malaysia Kini has denied wrongdoing, saying that the publication could not be held responsible for readers' comments.
So there is no evidence of intentional publication. And for contempt, you shouldn't be going for the messenger instead of the person making the comment. So in this case, we have divulged the information we have about the five people who posted the comments to the police. The information is there.
Rights groups have accused the government of stifling dissent after a series of clampdowns launched against critics of the administration. The hearing against Malaysia Kini comes days after police questioned six employees of Qatar-based broadcaster Al Jazeera over a documentary on Malaysia's detention of undocumented migrants during the coronavirus pandemic that authorities have accused of being inaccurate, misleading, and unfair. Still to come in today's program.
Right now, we're moving in the wrong direction. Instead of decreasing hunger for the last 5 years, we've seen hunger numbers steadily increase.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Caltech astronomers generated excitement in 2016 when they found evidence of a giant planet they called Planet Nine in the far reaches of the solar system. While Planet Nine has yet to be seen or imaged, evidence of its existence was gathered through observations of the odd orbital behavior of several Kuiper Belt objects. In October 2019, a new theory emerged that Planet Nine is not a planet, but actually a small-sized primordial black hole, or a black hole that had formed shortly after the Big Bang. Scientists at Harvard University and the Black Hole Initiative plan to determine whether the mystery object is or is not a black hole with their newly developed method of finding black holes in the outer solar system. The scientists plan to use their new way of spotting black holes at a new observatory that's being built in northern Chile. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to commute the sentence of political confidant Roger Stone is drawing sharp criticism from Democrats and pointed comments from the special counsel who oversaw his prosecution. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
Roger Stone was brought into this witch hunt, this whole political witch hunt, and the Mueller scam.
Speaking to reporters Saturday, President Trump said he had done the right thing by commuting Roger Stone's sentence because Stone and others who have been prosecuted, including former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, had been treated unfairly. But in an opinion piece in the Washington Post, the former special counsel asserts Stone was prosecuted and convicted because he committed federal crimes. Mueller enumerates Stone's repeated lies to Congress, including about his communications with people known to the FBI to be Russian intelligence officers, and says Stone remains a convicted felon. And rightly so. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff tells ABC's This Week,
this effort to get and use foreign assistance is what Roger Stone had information on, and he lied to cover up and protect the president.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
Zindi Mandela, the daughter of South African anti-apartheid leaders Nelson Mandela and Winnie Madikizela Mandela, has died at the age of 59. State Television, South African Broadcasting Corporation, has reported that Mandela died at a Johannesburg hospital early on Monday morning. The cause of her death has not been announced. She had been South Africa's ambassador to Denmark since 2015. Israeli police and Jerusalem municipal officers have scuffled with protesters and dismantled tents set up by demonstrators outside of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence. The demonstrators have staged a sit-in outside the Prime Minister's official residence for the past month, calling on him to resign while facing corruption charges. Video footage from the scene appears to show city officials and police officers tearing down banners and removing chairs and tents while tussling with demonstrators. Today, the United Nations Food Agency released its 2020 State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World report. It contains the most recent estimates of hunger, food insecurity, and malnutrition around the world. Earlier, I spoke with Cindy Holloman, senior economist at the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization and lead author of the report via Skype, about the latest estimates of what needs to be done to help the world's 690 million undernourished or hungry people.
The key finding of the report is that that this year we're seeing that the number of hungry, or the chronic undernourished, as we call them, is continuing to go up. So if we look at 2019, 10 million more people in the world have now fallen into that category of being hungry. If we look at the last 5 years, it's 60 million. So the key message is that the trend is not good. We've done a whole new estimation with new data and improved data from the countries. And this message is still confirmed and reconfirmed that we're heading in the wrong direction.
In terms of heading in the wrong direction, what does that do towards goals to eliminating hunger as a whole?
Right now, we're moving in the wrong direction. Instead of decreasing hunger for the last 5 years, we've seen hunger numbers steadily increase. It's not like we're just slowing down. We're moving in the opposite direction. They're increasing. And also, what we've done in this report this year is we've done some estimations and projections up to 2030 to see, you know, how far off track we are. And what it shows is that by 2030, we could be at 840 million people that are undernourished. And that's actually the highest since 2004. So it means that we're wiping away our gains that we've made in the last 15, 18, 20 years.
Based on your research, what's contributing to that?
For the last 3 years, we've looked in depth at three areas that's driving this trend of increasing hunger. The first one we looked at was conflict. And in many parts of the world, conflicts are becoming more complex, contracted, and that is contributing to chronic hunger. The other element is climate, increasing climate variability and extremes, changes in seasons, which is creating problems of people's income, but also access to food. Last year, we also focused on economic slowdowns. You know, the impact that COVID is another shock now, and it's a tremendous shock. That's having an impact globally, this pandemic. You also have disruptions in supply chains. So all of these factors contribute to also increases in hunger.
I wanted to ask you about that because we've been talking about, you know, a macro global effects of hunger. But if we drill down to the African continent, what are the main concerns there?
By the end of 2030, Africa can become the place where that not only has the highest prevalence or the proportion, but the highest number globally. So that's quite alarming in a geographic shift that we're seeing by 2030. And again, it's a combination of factors. It's the conflict, it's the climate, it's the economic. There is some good news coming out in terms of, you know, some of the economic growth in the countries and the development that's happening. However, the challenges are huge. So yes, Africa is one of the regions that we're especially concerned about. But the other focus of this report, what we're highlighting that's really important, it's also important for Africa, is the issue is it's not enough to have just enough food. It's about having healthy, nutritious food. And you know, our estimates are that 3 billion people around the world cannot afford a nutritious diet. And if we look at Africa and South Asia, you know, about 57% of the population there cannot even afford a healthy diet. So this has big implications. And I think, you know, why is it important to have a healthy diet? Because it's actually linked to food insecurity as well as malnutrition. So we see that the affordability, if a diet is not affordable, that's nutritious, we see higher rates of child stunting, we see higher rates of undernourishment, but also we see overweight and obesity because there's multiple forms of malnutrition. So, you know, not being able to have enough money to afford the cost of a nutritious diet is an important factor that is also driving these problems around hunger and malnutrition.
Cindy Holloman is an FAO senior economist and lead author of the agency's 2020 report on the state of food security and nutrition in the world. She spoke to me from her home in Rome, Italy. And finally, actress Kelly Preston has died. AP Entertainment correspondent Oscar Wells Gabriel has the details.
It was Kelly Preston's husband, John Travolta, who is confirming the sad news. He posted on Instagram late last night that his wife died yesterday after a 2-year battle with breast cancer. Travolta says he is passing on the news with a very heavy heart and that his wife of 28 years fought a courageous fight against the disease. Preston's film credits include Twins and Jerry Maguire. Travolta and Preston met when they were filming the 1988 movie The Expert. They last worked together in the 2018 film Gotti. In it, Travolta played the notorious crime boss John Gotti. Preston played his wife, Victoria. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by visiting voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking about the threat posed by the Communist Party of China, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told a forum on transatlantic relations, "We should address that challenge together." In his remarks at a virtual session of the Brussels Forum, Secretary Pompeo declared that the United States is not forcing Europe to choose between the free world or China's authoritarian vision. China is making that choice between freedom and democracy. "The problem that leaders on both sides of the Atlantic must solve," he said, "is how do we preserve freedom and democracy on both sides of the Atlantic and protect our citizens, EU citizens and American citizens alike, from China's malign activities. These include China's provocative military actions in the South China Sea and border with India, its opaque nuclear program and threats against peaceful neighbors." He cited Beijing's violations of its international commitments, including to the World Health Organization and the people of Hong Kong. He also pointed to the Chinese Communist Party's cover-up of the novel coronavirus, its predatory economic practices, theft of intellectual property, and legion of human rights abuses.
"My message today is this: we have to work together to continue the transatlantic awakening to the China challenge in the interest of preserving our free societies, our prosperity, and our future."
To further that goal, Secretary Pompeo announced that the United States has accepted a proposal put forth by the European Union's High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, to create a new U.S.-EU dialogue on China, which Mr. Pompeo described as a mechanism for discussing the concerns we have about the threat China poses to the West and our shared democratic ideals. He emphasized that recognizing the threat posed by China does not mean that Europe and the United States must choose between business and confronting the Chinese Communist Party.
"Recall that China needs markets too. And this is what President Trump figured out that, frankly, no president had been willing to undertake before, was that China needs access to Western knowledge, Western know-how. We need to make sure that they do that through the system of the rules-based order that has served the transatlantic so well for all of these years."
"My invitation to America's friends in Europe," said Secretary Pompeo, "is to defend these values in our time, that they may shape the world for the good in the future, just as they have done in the past. We'll defend these values together."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.